Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good afternoon, you are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. Today's date, it is Friday. Guess what? It's Friday 13th for those who believe in such things. I don't believe in superstitions, but I do take note of, you know, these dates that have been pushed through the mass media and whatnot. But it's Friday the 13th. It is May 13th, 2016. It is a Friday afternoon broadcasting to you from the state of North Carolina, from behind what I always call the enemy lines of USA Inc. So y'all have to bear with me today. I'm pulling double duty, and it's kind of fitting that the focus of today's program will be on our youth, because I have several grandsons and a granddaughter, and right now I'm actually attending to one. So if y'all hear Micah in the background, don't pay him no attention, trying to keep him out of that that pipeline to prison. All right, so that is the focus of today's program. We will be speaking with several different volunteer activists. It'll be a panel discussion. All of these people are working against the modern enslavement of children in the United States. And y'all know, listeners know how we keep it real on this program. And we do, in fact, point to the 13th Amendment and show you that this state never, this country never abolished slavery. You can't have slavery, claim to abolish slavery, and then make exceptions for slavery. That it doesn't work that way. It's not logical. And as we reported on the program New Abolitionist Radio this past Wednesday night, Colorado legislature, and as far as we know, all is waiting for the governor's signature, and they will remove the exception clause from the Colorado state constitution, removing that exception clause to where their constitution just reads that slavery will forever be abolished. So all of it, there are different forms of slavery. We do not act like, you know, what the stories we hear on TV where young teen, perhaps runaway male and female runaways, get trafficked by people they meet in the street, human traffickers and sexual traffickers, predators and what have you. But that type of enslavement is already illegal. Now, the legal kind, you know, lied, has built several industries around it and what have you. So it's not to say we're telling people don't focus any efforts towards, you know, these runaways and child prostitution and all that. But that stuff's already illegal. Once they're caught, they could be prosecuted. Why? It's legal for these corporations and their stockholders to profit from, some people call it the incarceration, you can call it that, I call it the enslavement of children. So if we have time later, we will also look at some of the news headlines of the day. So we'll be on for about an hour. If we need more time, if listeners have any questions or comments, y'all know how to get in. The conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. At any time, hit *6 and 1 as you hang out. And for those that listen through the telephone, the studio line, for those that's listening through other networks and, you know, other apps and what have you, for digital radio, you can hit us up with your questions or comments at 704-951-5030. So we are going to do this conference. Our guest for today, again, we're going to have a panel discussion with several volunteer activists. One of them, he's been a guest on this program. He's been a guest on New Abolitionist Radio. We've been aware of his work, I guess, going back to the first annual National Week of Action Against Incarcerating Youth. So first, let me bring on Anthony Nocella. All right, are you there, Anthony? Let me make sure I get everybody's mic unmuted. Okay, yeah. You there, Anthony?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
All right. Greetings to you, Anthony. If you would, just introduce yourself briefly as we then, you know, allow the other speakers one at a time to introduce themselves. But welcome, I welcome you all to Black Talk Radio News. So, Anthony, please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Hi. I'm Anthony Nocella. A professor at Fort Lewis College in Criminology and Sociology, and a national co-organizer of Save the Kids with David Mitchell, who you'll be hearing from today as well, and he's in Miami, and I'm in Durango, Colorado, and Ahmad Washington, also a national co-organizer of Save the Kids. And, you know, I'm really excited and honored to be on the radio, and I have a new book coming out, which if we have enough time, we'll talk about. It's focused on the school-to-prison pipeline and food justice and environmental justice, and how food justice and environmental justice have a strong and important issue when dismantling the school-to-prison pipeline. It's not all about curriculum. It's not just about culture. It's not about policies within school or policies in with the government, but it's also, which a lot of organizations don't focus on, is it has also to do with, is there healthy living, is there healthy food to be consumed within in particular communities, and so we can kind of talk about that. But yeah, we're next week, May 15th to May 21st, is the National Week of Action Against Incarcerating Youth, so we're pretty excited about that. We've got we're working on 150 organizations, getting them signed on, and more than 100 events going on throughout the country. Why May 15th through May 21st? Really quickly, May 17th is Brown versus Board of Education annual anniversary. May 19th is Malcolm X's birthday, and May 21st is Biggie's birthday. And of course, this month and next month are the highest rates of incarceration of youth because they're getting out of school. It's a beautiful sunny day, and they're expressing themselves. And law enforcement has a problem with youth expressing themselves, or at least there's nothing for them in the community because we don't put funding for kids for free water parks or nets for the tennis courts, or nets for the basketball courts, or making them safe, or lights on after 8 o'clock in certain neighborhoods so they can keep on playing. So we need to make sure that the kids in our communities and the youth in our communities and the children in our communities have something to do so they don't get in trouble by law enforcement. So that's a little bit of me in a nutshell. So, again, thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome, Anthony. Next, I would like to get David Roper to introduce himself to our audience, and welcome to you to Black Talk Radio News.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing the best I can behind these enemy lines, sir.
I feel you on that, brother. Yeah, man. So, my name is David Michael. Basically, I am a national coordinator along with Anthony Nocella down here in South Florida region. And, you know, basically piggybacking off of what Anthony said, you know, we, as far as the Save the Kid member, we basically deal with, you know, the incarceration of our youth from a school to prison pipeline perspective. I basically organize with several other activist organizations down here as far as going into the school systems and, you know, speaking to our youth about what actively goes on, you know, behind enemy lines that they need to be learning about, because we all know, unfortunately, the public school system do not teach that at all. Well, I also deal with, you know, I get out in the street and put, you know, the boots on the ground as far as dealing with, you know, the youth on a street level basis, because that's where our children are at, due to the fact that there are no programs and there are no, there aren't anything, like, there's no things for them to, you know, occupy their time with. So the streets is all they know. And then with the levels of what is actively going on right now as far as culture and the processing of the children growing up in this form of brainwashing and indoctrinating way, what winds up happening is, because that void is not filled with the things that they should know, they grab on to what the other side kind of wants them to know, the powers that be, you know. So I reach out to them and, you know, just basically talk to them where they're actively at. And we, you know, we just organize from there as far as to bring them in, mentor them, and, you know, just build up soldiers for the righteous cause.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for informing us on your activism out there. And let me also bring in Ahmed Washington. Greetings to you, sir. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News.
Ahmed, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing, sir? Welcome.
Good, good.
If you could give a brief introduction of, you know, of yourself and why you are involved in this national action and the everyday work that you're involved in, please go ahead and do that.
Okay. My name is Ahmed Washington, and I'm an assistant professor in the school counseling program at the University of Louisville. This, my connection with Save the Kids is really organic. I can't recall how it actually happened, but Anthony and I connected via one of my social media platforms, and I was familiar with his work and his writing, and was greatly inspired by it. I'm a school counseling professional and professor, and I think one of the things that often happens in my discipline is the fact that the role that school counselors can play in interrupting the school to prison pipeline isn't thoroughly explored and examined, and it doesn't come up in conversations that I've had with some of my former students. So my commitment to the work and my interest in the work comes from a desire to make sure that I'm doing everything that I can inside the classroom with future school counselors to think seriously about the ways in which they approach their work and how they can be activists in their professional roles in helping to disrupt the school-to-prison pipeline. So that's what I hope to accomplish in my career inside the academy, but outside the academy here in Louisville, working with organizations like the Louisville Urban League, for instance, and finding activists and organizations in the community who are committed to this work and are about the business of ensuring that young people, particularly young people of color and other marginalized student populations who are disproportionately impacted by the school prison pipeline, recognize that this is about economics, this is about education being a tool for indoctrination, and how they're being marginalized and taken for granted in schools is a way to leverage power against them so that they become sucked up into the school prison pipeline that seeks to exploit their labor, quite honestly.
You know, that's what slavery is all about, is exploiting labor, you know, either through force or coercion. That's what I trace it all back to. I know a lot of people I talk to, and it's no problem that some people just haven't come to that same conclusion that what we're dealing with is a very old evil, and we call it mass incarceration, when it's really, really slavery, which we know you could be born into it. Now that's more of a metaphorical sense, but what you all have been describing is a pathway to enslavement for the children, you know. So I think it's always important that we make that historical connection to what we see going on right before our eyes today. But I again want to commend all of you gentlemen for coming on today, and you sound like people who are directly working with youth and speaking to youth, and so therefore, you know, for the purposes of this program, can act as ambassadors for the youth. But I want to take it back to Anthony. Anthony, I remember interviewing you. I don't know if it was 2 years ago. I don't know, but I know it's been on several programs. But I remember when this national action first launched. And so can you tell us how this movement has grown? This is the fourth annual National Week of Action Against Incarcerating Youth. How much has it grown? And we just heard, you know, Ahmed describing how he got into it, you know, it was organically. And so how much growth are you seeing? And tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So I do see a major growth nationally around the school to prison pipeline. We do have a huge amounts of racial disparity when students are arrested, three times the rate of white students being suspended in schools, and then we have students with disabilities two times the rate of their general population, and 1.4 percent of LGBT students getting pushed out and expelled and suspended. So there is an issue that we need to speak about. There is an alarming rate of approximately around 85% of students of youth that are incarcerated are youth of color. In Minneapolis, Hennepin County, it was 97% of youth. The highest per capita of group that is being incarcerated is Native Americans, while the largest group of people that are incarcerated is, of course, Black youth. There are programs growing. Linda Casey Foundation is putting funding towards, JDAIs, Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiatives. Dignies in Schools, a grassroots organization coalition that brings a lot of organizations together to talk about school pushout. In New York, we have a good group that's the Center for Community Alternatives based in Syracuse, as well as New York City. Project NEA out of Chicago, they're grassroots. They really keep it real. They're amazing and respected. And then Los Angeles, we have Youth Justice Coalition that works really well with youth that are Latino, Chicano, in South Los Angeles. And then Save the Kids has a number of chapters. But, the first time we did it, we had approximately, 20 events throughout the whole country and maybe, 30 organizations. Last year, our third annual, we had 109 organizations involved and approximately 120 events or so, and some of them really big. Some of them were, 300, 400 people rallies taking over the streets. And then this year, we're hoping to get 150 and 200 events, and we're getting more and more every day, and we're getting more and more cities every day, and that's what we're really excited about. And so... I think people are becoming more sophisticated about the issue of the school-to-prison pipeline, the problems of the school-to-prison pipeline, and looking at the solutions of the school-to-prison pipeline. And Save the Kids, our number one goal is to educate the community and put pressure on the system to change a number of its policies and practices aid in dismantling the school-to-prison pipeline. And one of those issues is that we need to not look at incarceration as any reason to incarcerate any youth, because recidivism is extremely high within juvenile justice, and we know it's approximately about 60% of youth that are repeat offenders. And once they repeat, and if they keep on repeating, for example, in New York, if they keep on repeating until the age of 16, then they can be incarcerated as an adult. And so the Child Defense Fund based in New York, they're trying to do the raise the age so that a child won't be prosecuted at the age of 16, but rather at the age of 18. And Center for Community Alternatives, Save the Kids, and a number of other organizations are trying to push or raise the age in New York. That being said, once a youth is incarcerated, it's very hard for them to get out. And so we see a statistic that is so true and factual that most people that are incarcerated as adults have a juvenile background. And so if we want to end the mass incarceration or slavery in the United States in the 21st century and these massive prisons that are popping up all over the country, we need to stop incarcerating our youth and keep them in education. But that also means that we need to get cops and safety resource officers out of school. There's no need for them. We need to get counselors, therapists, mediators, and we need to teach mediation, peer mediation, peacemaking, conflict transformation in schools. And if we do, what we'll have is more people knowing how to resolve their conflicts. And then also, if a kid, you know, steals another kid's hat, we don't need to prosecute that child. What we need to do is resolve it through a transformative and holistic process rather than getting police involved, which wasn't the case 20 years ago. So there's work to be done, but there's a lot of great organizations that are popping up, and including Campaign for Youth Justice and Youth Just are putting out information throughout the week all over social media. So check out, you know, those organizations that I've mentioned and so many others. So that's what I would kind of note about how the movement is growing around this. So if people are interested in prison abolition or the Alabama movement that's going on in Alabama, the uprising in Texas in the prison, or if people are interested in political prisoners and supporting Mumia Abu-Jamal, well, we need to eliminate juvenile justice, allowing them to be incarcerated, allowing juvenile justice system to incarcerate youth. And so if we do that, we do end the mass incarceration. And so a lot of those adults that are involved in mass incarceration and prison abolition need to also be involved in eliminating the incarceration of youth. So,
well, it's certainly great to hear that the coalition is growing, because oftentimes some people expect like one organization or two organizations, and then I'm not going to say any names, but oftentimes those organizations, although they've been around for decades, they're now dependent upon funding from corporations, also are too close to the U.S. government itself. So it just, to me, is going to take grassroots people like what we have on the line, educators, you know, not necessarily, you know, professional agitators, but people who really do care about this issue. So, you know, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of grassroots organizations, and it's just good to see that, many more of them are starting to take up this issue and collaborating with other organizations, because it's hard, you know. You need resources to fight a beast like this, you know, because they certainly have all the resources they need to practice, you know, the slavery that they practicing, with people profiting, stockholders, CEOs, and what have you, profiting off of all of this. David, you mentioned earlier, you know, about the youth in the streets and culture. And yesterday we had Brother Kwabena Rasuli on. He, you know, is an activist that lives in the Gary, Indiana area, but also, you know, works with people in Chicago. And they have a project they've been doing for a couple of years called Clear the Airwaves. And as we always talking about the prison, the school to prison pipeline, you know, culture also, you know, can dictate behavior. Well, yesterday we was really talking about music and all of this music that is being played on the terrestrial radio stations that, quite frankly, do promote negative behavior, criminal behavior, you know, and all of that, and how that influences the minds of the youth and get them to become repeat offenders. And then by the, you know, if you in New York, by the time you're 16, now we sending you off to the big house. You know what I'm saying? And so are people that you come in contact with, are they taking a look at that aspect of it, of how that plays a role in the pipeline for our youth, the music and media?
Yes, sir, it does. It, matter of fact, it plays a major part in what is actively going on due to the fact that a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of our people, and I'm talking about minority people, you know what I'm saying, have no sense of history as a whole. You see what I'm saying? So what winds up happening is that void needs to be filled. That gap needs to be filled with something. And most of the time it's filled with the television and what the television describes to them on how they should be. And majority of the things that are displayed on the television is propaganda and stereotypical aspects of the perspectives of who you should be as a person. So what winds up happening is through the music, which is very influential. I mean, we all can agree that, you know, throughout our day, you know what I mean, we listen to at least one song or have that playlist, specific playlist of songs that kind of get us up, motivated, you know, for us to start our day. Unfortunately, with what's going on with our children is that the music that they choose to play is very negative. It's and they're going off to school like this. So what winds up happening is if they come into a conflict with an individual at school, they may get into a fight or, you know, misbehave in class, you know what I'm saying, to kind of like fit into with the other children that are acting the same way in our urban schools. I mean, down here in Florida, 67% of schools, you know, when people get arrested, it's only for misdemeanor charges. You see what I'm saying? And that's like, it's crazy because the majority of people that are getting locked up for these things are minority kids. And like Anthony Nocella said, the majority of the people that wind up getting, you know, charges as a juvenile winds up becoming a statistic because they get arrested and get locked up and get sent to prison as an adult. You know, I was one of them, you know, as far as me being incarcerated for 8 years. So I know firsthand, you know what I'm saying, as far as with what takes place in the mind of this, because music was very influential to me. And it I would not say that it led me to do some of the things that I did, but it fueled the motivation for it. You get what I'm saying? So
it's a piece of the puzzle.
Huh?
I said it's just an ingredient, you know. It's just a piece of the puzzle. I feel you. You know, I was a youth, and you know, it has an influence. I read the scientific studies. You know, a human brain does not fully develop until a person is usually around 26 years old, and so I know how music influenced my dress, my manner of speaking. you know, my social skills and what have you, how I interacted. We were just talking about that with the passing of Prince. You know, Prince, you when Prince and the Time and all of them and those who were fans of that music, I was in high school, you know, probably 10th grade, something like that. And, you know, we dressed like they dressed. It was no sagging. You know, you were wearing suit and tie, Moore's Day and all of that. So, I mean, that is the influence that music wields over youth, the way that you speak, how you view women, how you treat women, and as we talked about on yesterday's show, you know, that does have a role in the social development of youth.
Right. And you know, one of the major things too is the vision, you know, the audience that they try to attempt, not that they try, they do cater to, and majority of the time they do cater to the youth when they show specific images. And a lot of things become, as you see nowadays, it has become sexualized, you know, as far as the music videos, women wearing more skimpier things, you know, the men treating the women a specific way. And what winds up happening in the schools, which is a whole other category, you know, is situations where you have babies having babies. So, you know, overall, what we need to do as far as with when it comes to dealing with our youth is basically guide them into the educational aspect of, you know, understanding what's actively going on, because the things that we're talking about here today has been going on forever. I mean, since Jim Crow, you know. And the problem is that I feel that, you know, we keep doing the same as a whole. We continue to do the same thing over and over and over again. And that, and one of the main things is not educate ourselves on what needs to be done and what is actively happening. Most of the time we just turn a blind side to it and say, well, you know, the famous line, you know, it is what it is, or that's just the way it is, and that's it. No, it's that way because we allow it to be that way. Once we learn what's going on and see what's going on a larger scale, then we will be able to, you know, work as a unit, you know, to basically kind of like down some of this stuff that's going on within our communities. And the first people that we do have to reach is our youth, because they're the ones that are coming up as far as, you know, for the next generation. And I believe personally that, yes, we do need to hold some of these individuals that are entertaining our youth accountable for the stuff that they put out, you know, because, like you just said, you know, the brain, especially at that time, is still growing. It's still developing. So with all this garbage that's being pumped into the brain, what winds up happening is, you know, this is what's going to be played out, you know, and it's messed up.
Yeah, you're programming children for the pipeline. That's what we talked about. And and while individuals should be accountable, and most importantly, people should hold themselves accountable, but in terms of what we're talking about with the music industry, well, you know, it's easy to target the puppet, but what about the puppeteers? And the approach to Clear the Airways project, for example, this weekend, they'll be demonstrating outside of a McDonald's that plays advertisements, therefore aka sponsoring the murder music, as we was calling it yesterday. And if you aren't willing to play that radio station's playlist in your business establishment, then why would you pay for it to be pumped into the community? So it's just holding everybody accountable, the business community, if they indeed want to call themselves part of the community. We all have a role to play. And it, and like was stated earlier, this pipeline only exists because we've allowed it to. And there are just so many different angles that people attack it from. I do need to take our first break. And then when we come back, I want to go to Professor Ahmad Washington, because I have some questions for him and bring him into the conversation. And also, if you have any questions or comments, please don't wait to the last minute. If you want to ask any of these men a question about the issue we're talking about today and the event that is going to kick off next week, the 2016 4th Annual National Week of Action Against Incarcerating Youth, give us a call. That studio line is 704-951-5030. The conference line is 641-715-3660. 549-032-POUND is the participant code in *6 and 1 for those that are listening and want to speak. We'll be right back on the other side. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News on the Black Talk Radio Network. Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium. And welcome back to the program. Again, today we are speaking to some volunteer activists for our youth, trying to keep them out of that. Well, not trying to keep them out, our youth, that is, out of the prison pipeline. Yeah, they're doing that too, and we're talking about that, but also dismantling the pipeline. All right, it shouldn't even exist, as has been expressed in many different ways on the program thus far. So we're speaking today to Anthony, David, and Ahmed, and I want to bring Ahmed Washington in. Sir, you said that, you know, you are an educator at the University of Louisville, if I remember correctly. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And, you know, I noticed, you know, along the lines of this news, that the university community on some campuses, we have been seeing, you know, in the news headlines over the past year, student-led protests and group mainly focusing on racism, institutional racism. But we also been seeing people focusing on the private prisons and dismantling that form of enslavement. So I know Columbia students led an effort to get Columbia University to divest from private prison stocks. A couple of weeks ago, I saw an article about the University of Houston, the students there and members of the faculty also pressing that university on that front. And so what are your thoughts about the divestment, and what role do you see it playing, you know, as an educator at a university where, you know, perhaps pensions and, I mean, Wednesday night we were talking about the teachers union in California being invested in private prison stocks. So what are your thoughts on that, sir?
Absolutely. I think that's a noble endeavor. And I think as we talk about how can we, first recognizing that like historically the society has not been invested in creating people who are politically, socio-politically conscious, who are awake, for lack of a better term. So as we're talking about the school to prison pipeline, and we're talking about the prison industrial complex, the minute that we engage in the work of highlighting the fact that it is an economic stimulus program for the very, very wealthy and the very, very elite, we then have to ask questions if we consider ourselves like social justice advocates, like what role do we play in advancing and continuing this, you know, this economic engine that is full of exploitation, that exploits people who are historically undereducated and oppressed on the basis of race, class, gender, etc. So I think it's absolutely essential that people start asking themselves, well, how do I benefit? How am I complicit with this system of oppression? And then when the determination is made that you in some way, shape, form, or fashion contribute to it, then you then have to ask your question, ask yourself, how can I make an informed decision about how to separate myself from this this institution that exploits so many people? When I go into schools and talk with young people, I often ask them, how do they understand the prison industrial complex and the way that it stimulates the local economy, and how does it stimulate tremendous financial wealth for very, very wealthy people? And oftentimes they're very, very oblivious and uninformed about the type of products that are generated in prisons. So I'm from South Carolina originally, and when I ask young people in schools about what are some of the products that are often made by people who are incarcerated, in South Carolina, in one of the women institutions, one of the things that they make, one of the products that they make, is Victoria's Secret lingerie. And when they hear that, young people are completely floored that a garment that will cost upwards of $50 or $60 is being manufactured by people who make virtually nothing over the course of a week. So I think we have to start with those very critical conversations about in the ways in which the businesses that we support are benefiting from the labor of people who have very little, and communities that have been destroyed in order for this pipeline, this monstrosity called the prison industrial complex, to actually exist. So that's one thing. But also the other part is thinking about how institutions of our higher education are also creating teachers and school counselors and school administrators who, in the ways in which that they perform their duties in school, are also agents of the state. And I think that's a very critical conversation that hasn't happened enough in school counseling. So I think that's a part of the conversation that we have to engage consistently, that when we teach these school counselors, if we're teaching them to be colorblind and color oblivious, then we aren't equipping them with the skills necessary to take a more discerning look at how discipline policies, when enacted, have very different impacts on different groups of students. So that's what I would say to your question, and I hope I did a decent job in answering it.
Yes, you did. But, you know, also the system, and I'm talking about the education system, that where you have teachers, and, you know, these are some of the most educated, this is supposed to be the educated class, right? Because they're teaching, they're educating, you know, the youth and what have you. And I wouldn't say that they're ignorant about their investments and where, you know, their pension funds are coming from, and they keep seeing their fund growing. You know, they get the quarterly reports and all that. They're paying attention, and so for you to not have a moral conflict there, you know what I'm saying? It just seems
absolutely.
Yeah.
I wasn't disagreeing. What I'm saying is not just that, but when they are actively teaching students, when they're engaging students, when they are making decisions and determinations about whether or not a child, for instance, will be referred to mental health services, or whether or not they will be pushed out of school. Like, those are the sorts of questions that educators, of future educators and future school counselors and future school administrators, have to think seriously. So if I avoid those conversations in my class, if I operate or construct my classroom in a way that tells them either explicitly or implies that race and class and gender are not things that they need to consider as they examine who's being punished and who isn't, then I'm also complicit in the school to prison pipeline.
Right. Understood. You said they are agents of the state,
Absolutely.
Like any other agent of the state, a police officer, school resource officer, same thing. I call them slave catchers, though. You know, the social service worker. And we've had some horrible stories about corruption and abuse in the social service system here in North Carolina. So I hear you. And then some people, they could be participating in something and not being aware, and it's not that they have an evil heart or evil intent, but they just never looked at it that way.
Right.
So that is what our job is, you know, and that's part of the intent to have these critical conversations like you mentioned. I want to take it back to Anthony. I want to give each and every one of you, thank you again for joining us here today, an opportunity to make, you know, lead the listeners with some final thoughts as we get close to the close of this broadcast. But Anthony, thank you again, brother, for putting together this panel and joining us here on Black Talk Radio News. What are your final thoughts that you would like to lead the listeners with? And again, I'm sorry we didn't get into your book, but please send me that information so we could bring you back just to talk about that, but also tell people how to connect, you know, if they want to participate, if they want to sponsor, if they want to lend, you know, boots to the ground for the 2016 Fourth Annual National Week of Action Against Incarcerating Youth. Tell them where they can find that information.
Sure, I'll do a quick little summary and then kind of tell you where you can find more information. So, again, this is the fourth annual National Week Against Incarcerating Youth, and we don't believe that any youth should be incarcerated, and there's so many alternatives and community-based programs that are out there now more than ever, and we need to support them. This is a fully volunteer organization, Save the Kids, and we're not getting paid. So everybody that's involved, all of our chapters, if you want to start a chapter, if you're dedicated, and understand, alternatives to incarceration. And, you know, the four groups that are targeted the most by the School to Prison Pipeline are LGBTQIA youth, gay and lesbian youth, the youth of color, youth with disabilities, and economically disadvantaged youth. And so, they're criminalized by being stigmatized by their dress, their language, what they eat, where they live, their behaviors. In certain cities and states, if you sag your pants, you can get up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. This is just modern day, you know, Jim Crow, and they're just trying to find different ways for to incarcerate and criminalize and stigmatize youth of color. Specifically hip-hop youth. And so then they also police youth by surveilling them in schools by cameras, random searches, stop and frisk. And we know that stop and frisk, 9 out of 10 stop and frisk people are innocent, and the majority of the people that are being stop and frisk are black males that, again, are innocent. And then, of course, the incarceration of youth. We need to get away from this very barbaric, punitive discipline, an eye for an eye kind of mentality, which teaches nobody anything. And so education is a lot more difficult, but then we have to look at the education system. And, you know, we have a huge number of white female teachers that are teaching youth of color. And so there is a cultural disconnect. And by taking a class in higher education called cultural competence, which is make-believe, that means that a white person will understand what it means to be black in America, and you'll never understand what it means to be black in America. And to say that education is an apolitical, non-subjective, form of processing information is BS. And so to have somebody with disabilities like autism, and teaching somebody that has autism, they're going to connect a lot better, and then the education is going to be that much more successful for that youth. So we need to get more professors as well as teachers K-12 of color from those communities those youth are from into those schools. And I think we need to provide federal funding and state funding for those opportunities for those full scholarships, and that is one step in the right direction of reparation. And I think that's what we need to do, is we need to get white people out of education when teaching youth of color, and allow them to teach black liberation and black consciousness and black the understanding that self determination, and I think that needs to be understood. Marcus Garvey from Jamaica understood that, and I think we need to keep on perpetuating and articulating what Assad Shakur is saying, what John Wilson Kim is saying, what Mumia Abu-Jamal is saying, what Bell Hooks is saying, what Angela Davis is saying, and that's why the Black Panther Party was so dangerous, is because they were teaching these youth that they should have self-dignity, and that they are not inferior. They are not the minority. They are not the three-fifths vote. That eugenics is bullshit, if I may say that. So I think we need to really provide space and place, and white people need to start risking more and defending more the opportunities for blacks, teachers and black educators. There's a very few black educators in higher education. Ahmad is one of them, and we need to praise and support what they're saying, as well as in Native Americans, as well as Latinos, as well as LGBTQ, and as well as professors with disabilities. So it's not this monolithic white supremacist able-bodied education, this hetero education that we are pushing down the throats of higher education students, as well as K-12 students. It's violent. It's more violent than killing someone, and so Pinochet in Chile knew that, and every other dictator knows, if you brainwash people to believe that they're inferior, that's a better way of killing them, because we enslave them. So and that's kind of like boarding schools for Native Americans. So that's what I would kind of end with, and understanding as a white male my place in the movement, which is to help and work more and risk more, and I think there's a lot of white people that need to do a lot more to show that they're an ally, and I strive to show that I'm an ally on a daily basis, and I'm willing to be put in check, which the white people need to be willing to do, and to apologize and take ownership and accountability for our actions and our privileges that we don't deserve to have. So I would like to end with that note and give the mic to Ahmad and David.
All right. Thank you for that, Anthony. And just a quick note to bring connected to current events. You mentioned Pinochet, a war criminal. Henry Kissinger just got a medal from the White House, from the Obama administration. And, so I'm like, wow. Pinochet.
And I would like to just add that we're speaking on the anniversary of May 13th, 1985, I believe that's the year that MOVE
was bombed. Right.
So this is a day that we need to mourn. Remember, it was the Philadelphia police bombing a black liberation education group that is speaking about everything that we're speaking about, but they spoke about it 20, 30 years ago. And these people, the MOVE 9, are still incarcerated, including Mumia Abu-Jamal, who we need to free. I'd just like to interrupt on that note.
Yeah, the three sisters have a parole date. They've come up for parole. You can find out more information on Facebook on our Political Prisoner Radio page. So thank you for mentioning that as well, Anthony. And you also mentioned boarding school for Native Americans. I reported last week on this program, actually played the audio there. There was a New York editorial board that interviewed Hillary Clinton, and she talked about creating boarding schools for poor children. And that's the first thing. I used that graphic of little Native Americans in their Native American dress, and then the after, after they've been sent to one of these boarding schools and forced to assimilate, stripped of their language, stripped of their culture. And I was just like, in a historical context, tripping that nobody was paying attention or made a big deal that Hillary Clinton just said she would like to see a national boarding school system for poor children. So I'm just looking at it in a historical context. David, thank you for joining us today. Please, what would you like to leave the listeners with? Any information at all?
Thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate the opportunity, to speak out any time that I can. What I would like to leave the listeners with is as far as adult-wise, we need to pay more attention to our youth. We need to pay more attention to what they are saying to us and what they are actively doing. And also, we need to educate ourselves on the culture of the youth, whether it's, pertaining to gangs, the music, the shows that are being displayed and advertised to our youth, down to the clothes, just everything in grave detail, because that's one of the major things that, as an adult, that we tend to kind of, overlook, which is the grave details of things. We speak from an authoritative level consistently, so then what winds up happening psychologically, we do that to our children and we do it to other people's children. Okay. One of the major quotes I like to go off of is, to in order to beat the enemy, you must know the enemy. So if these people are our enemy, as far as, the companies and the corporations, as far as them marketing the garbage to our children, we must know what they are doing and then understand how our children are actively molding it into their culture and how they act and how they move, because that's all they're doing. They might not follow it fully to the T on how they're producing it, but they are taking some stuff away from it and then fitting it into what they are actively doing out here. So it's just a sense of, understanding and being socially aware and being aware of the things and keeping up with the times, with what's going on. That way, when we do talk to them, we can talk to them from a relatable aspect and perspective, instead of me being the adult and then you're the child, so it's like you have to listen, because speaking from that point of view, they're not going to listen. And one of the main problems that I have with adults is the generational gap, which would be, these kids are wild, these kids nowadays don't have any sense of dignity, any guidance, blah, blah, blah. No, well, what about your generation? I mean, I'm under the assumption that your generation was kind of the same way too, even you at one point, and eventually you grew up. It's just, as of right now, it's getting worse, because there's no guidance. There was no guidance before then, and there was no guidance before that. So what winds up happening is, of course, logically, it's just going to continue to get worse and worse and worse until everybody as a whole is like, okay, you know what? That's enough. This along the line somewhere, this has to stop. This is ridiculous, And for the youth that's listening, don't believe everything that you see. Don't stop going along with the times. Question everything. Always question what you see and what these people are feeding you. I mean, subconsciously, we know right from wrong, and you know what's good for you and you know what's not good for you. Educate yourself. Take a sense of pride in where you come from, who you are as a person. Research your history prior to slavery, just continue to remain steadfast and move forward, because when you seek, you shall find. And knowledge is power. The right knowledge is power. That's all.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Michael. That was David Michael. Mr. Ahmed Washington, sir, final thoughts for the listeners to take to chew on later.
First of all, thank you for offering and inviting me into the space. I really appreciate it. I think everything that I would want the audience to not necessarily walk away with, I'm assuming that many of your listeners already know these things. What I would strongly recommend is like creating spaces within your community where these conversations can happen on a more consistent basis. Making sure that you identify allies that you can trust, allies who have proven, who demonstrated to you that these are things that they're committed to, and then using that collective power to push back and resist against these systems that we're talking about. Creating these alliances wherever you happen to be, and not isolating and segregating yourself, but recognizing that we all share, like was mentioned earlier, we share a common enemy, and the common enemy is a form of economic exploitation that is based in racial fallacies and preconceived notions about what evil and crime and criminality look like. And we have to recognize that the language that is often circulated on television, it's circulated for a specific purpose to rationalize the incarceration of youth of color and youth from, you know, marginalized populations. So just creating spaces, whether they're digital spaces, whether they're happening in your communities or local meeting spaces, having these conversations at the places that we frequent, like barbershops and beauty salons, and just making this an active part of our everyday conversation, because this is something that, as you said several times, has been around since the 13th Amendment. So there's no reason to think that this won't be a fight that our children's children will not be engaging in. So that'd be it. And again, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I hope my grandsons don't grow up and still be fighting this battle, but, you know, do got to acknowledge the enemy and just how long this system has been operating and what we're up against. We're up against the billionaire class. We're just up against so much. And so, but we are starting to see some progress. Even, you know, like I told some of the other guys, you know, we have to also celebrate our victories, no matter how small, because, you know, there are many battles in a war. And with the Colorado, although I don't want to, you know, jinx it or jump the gun, but if that governor signs into law, you know, the amendment to their constitution that says slavery will forever be abolished, then the activists in that state right there will have a legal tool to dismantle what people call the prison industrial complex, what we come to know as mass incarceration, which all of it is just different forms of slavery. So that'll be a great tool. So that's a, you know, keep our fingers crossed. And, you know, so I just appreciate everybody, all the abolitionist efforts out there. It's a growing movement that I'm seeing, and maybe we all don't see, you know, eye to eye or see the system in the same way, but we do recognize, you know, that there is a common oppressor here, and so we're all lending a hand, you know, in this war against what I call, again, 21st century slavery and human trafficking. All right, gentlemen, thank you again for sharing your time with us today, and I hope next week, Anthony, we can get, since Black Talk Media Project is helping to sponsor, you know, we would like to get some reports, even if it's just 10 minutes of that day's activity. We do those pre-recorded or whatnot, but we want to do our part as, you know, a member of the media to keep people informed and aware of, you know, that other people are doing something, and so they may be inspired. But thank you all, and you gentlemen have a great day. All right, that concludes today's broadcast. Coming up later on Black Talk Radio, a Tando radio show will be coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. It should be Race Treaty Radio, and then the Lotus Place carrying out the night. at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Yeah, 10 to 12. So taking you up to Saturday morning. So that's some of the live streaming plan today here on the Black Talk Radio Network. Remember, if you appreciate the information, if you benefit any kind of way from these broadcasts, then support it and make sure that we can stay on the air. Again, you hear the promos running for the Black Media crowdfunding campaign. And so, you know, again, we got these t-shirts. By the way, I do have an extra, extra large and some more extra large for those who were asking, and contribute not only so that we can maintain this digital space, but, you know, as the professor was speaking, Mr. Washington was speaking, I was thinking about, you know, that's what we want to do with Black Talk Media Project, not only create a digital space, but actual presence in the community, just like a terrestrial radio station would have, just like a newspaper would have, just like any other corporations might have an affiliate in that city. We also need to be training up our own journalists as youth and getting them to report on from the ground what's going on in our communities that we know. The six major corporations that control 95% of what we hear, see, and read, you know, are hiding a lot of this information, hiding it from the world and hiding it from us. So we definitely, that is what we are crowdfunding for the future for. So thank you again to our guests who joined us today. Again, we have linked to the websites, so if you're listening to this later on the podcast, find out more information, go check out, and I'm just trying to pull it up so I can give it out on air. Again, talking about the 4th Annual National Week of Action Against Incarcerating Youth, and that website, if I can get it for you. They're also on social media, so if you put in the National Week of Action Against Incarcerating Youth in the Facebook search page, you'll see the group come up. You'll be notified of the events, but their website where you can go get more information, like some of the gentlemen shared with us today, then that website is, I tell you, it is SaveTheKidsGroup.org. SaveTheKidsGroup.org. Sorry it took so long to pull that information up. All right, thank you again to our guests. Thank you to the listeners. For those listening later on podcast, make sure to share the podcast and spread this information, because, again, as I stated, you know, six corporations control 95% of all the news media, all the entertainment media, just media, period. And so we need to share the information. We need to spread the consciousness. We need to spread the real talk. We need to spread Black talk. Peace and blessings to all. Y'all be safe out there.